following podcast may contain spoilers, strong language, graphic violence, and nudity. Viewer discretion is advised.
They're under the ground!
Four guys and a movie. Four guys and a movie. Don't I, Brian Robbins, you're reviewing movies for the show. Four guys and a movie.
Hello and welcome to the 4AM podcast, where me and three other idiots sit around watching movies and discuss them. I am your host for this evening, Tony, along with
Brian,
Joe,
and Rob.
Tonight we watch the horror movie classic 1990s Tremors, starring Fred Ward, Kevin Bacon, and Michael Gross.
And Reba.
And Reba McEntire, and a few other miscellaneous. Finn Carter?
I don't know who that is. I think it probably stopped.
The poor woman that got her pants ripped off.
Don't forget about the sorcerer guy from Big Trouble in Little China, the ass that sells them the Bogwai and Gremlins.
One dude from the Golden Child. He's like, I want the bag.
So Tremors starts off like any great movie should, with someone peeing.
Kevin Bacon peeing, and then two men fighting over breakfast.
Beginning with our recurring rock, paper, scissors theme.
Kevin Bacon sucks at rock, paper, scissors.
He sure does.
I don't think he ever won.
And also proving that they are, as Kevin Bacon states, quote unquote, handymen, and then proceeds to be the worst handyman ever by almost smashing the shit out of his own hand with that hammer. To get up a fence.
Our two main characters, Earl and Valentine, they are two handymen.
Two good old boys.
Good old boys.
Goop.
Cowboy boots and cowboy hats. And
I believe they have about $3 to their name.
$3.
Lots of denims.
Mm-hmm.
For the citizens of Perfection Valley.
All 14 of them. Although, I don't know, would they be, do they live in Perfection? Would they be included in the 14?
Yes, no, they live in
they strive for perfection.
Wow.
they strive for perfection and they live in a truck.
Wait.
Which also does beg the question, where the hell do they live?
They live in their truck, don't they?
No, they do see their house.
They're packing at one point. You do see their house. Yep. So they are living somewhere around Perfection.
But they just couldn't afford an interior for their house, so we never actually see them inside of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
No interiors other than the
shop. Actually someone's trailer they put there, so they wouldn't release them to actually be able to film the inside.
Just filming in some dude's yard.
That probably was like a production trailer.
It's just full of blue M&Ms.
So these two guys decide that all their side jobs that have them doing things like fixing fences and driving bulldozers and sucking out shit from septic tanks, bit too much for them, so they're like, we're out of here.
Well, I mean, it's being hit by a poo geyser, I think, is what set them off.
Yeah.
And
I believe Kevin Bacon strived to find his perfect woman, which actually a little disturbing if you really go through the description.
Well, you don't want legs that go all the way up.
Yeah.
Blonde hair, green eyes.
Green eyes, world-class breasts, an ass that won't quit, and legs that go all the way up.
Great.
All the way up permanent.
If you really, think about that, there's no stomach, there's probably no arms or hands.
Maybe all the way up it just means they attach.
I guess.
Because, I mean, I want that too. Like, not that I wouldn't date a woman without legs, but, you know, if they were, like, separate, didn't attach, that would be a little weird.
They only go half the way up, and then there's just this odd space in the middle.
It's got, like, some RoboCop-style prosthesis. It then goes back to her normal legs.
So there's some weird readings, I guess they find out, because they drive past this. They drive past this seismologist on the way to the brown shower, right?
Well, they only stopped because they heard it was a girl, and they wanted to see if she met all five of his criteria.
I believe her name was Rhonda. The exact opposite. Her name is Rhonda, played by Finn Carter, which kind of sounds like somebody from Marvel Shield or something.
Agent Carter.
Well, it's like if Finn from Adventure Time became an agent of Shield.
Oh man, that'd be kind of awesome.
That would be kind of awesome.
Write that down, Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon, Pendleton Ward team up?
Yeah, Bullet Worlds. You can do it, Josh.
Adventures of S.H.I.E.L.D. There it is, right there.
And who wouldn't want to see Jake in the newest Avengers movie?
I would also go with Agent Time. That would be
They could use Jake since Marvel doesn't have Fantastic Four. They could use him as a replacement, Mr. Fantastic.
Pretty well.
We are off subject.
they run into this girl who is finding odd readings around the town. Something seems to be causing some kind of disturbance. They don't really seem to give a crap. They're just interested in packing up and getting out of perfection.
Well, she wasn't as hot as he wanted, so he was like, we're out of here.
Yeah.
For reasons not explained, she's taking seismic readings in the butt crack of Nevada. I don't know what needs to be studied out there seismically.
Well, she's doing like her thesis or something, right, for the university?
Yeah.
So maybe they're just like, well, just go out there and study prairie
rocks
dog
that don't
readings.
Really do anything.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've only ever briefly been in Nevada. Maybe there was seismic activity out there. Just seemed kind of weird.
Could be. I mean, the whole thing seems like the front half of the movie seems to be just wacky antics between these two guys.
It's pretty much just set up for the characters and things to come.
Well, you do see when we meet the girl that the camera is stalking her around at ground level.
Seemingly striking the door of her truck, which she doesn't seem to notice or even notice the smell, despite the fact that later on we will find out these things reek horribly.
Well, like, you don't want to have the monster come out too early. You know?
Oh, yeah. So the jaws effect, and I don't blame them for that. Just kind of odd, but that's what horror movies do.
But no, most of the first part of the movie is setting up for the end. So we see like some things that he used in the final battle.
Yeah, starting with the beginning, pissing shot is actually going to be the same area. We'll end the movie when they're doing one of their many jobs, picking up garbage. They're using a large bulldozer called the Cat.
So they finally decide that they're going to peace out of town.
Yeah. So they pack up by loosely just shoving everything in the back of their truck.
Which is about right. They roll on out. On the way out, somehow, Val sees a guy in a power line.
Well, what else did he have to look at?
True.
Yeah, there was nothing for miles.
Literally nothing.
He sees some guy up in the upper power pole, and he's like, "What's that? Oh, that's the guy from town I know, because I know that sweatshirt."
So yeah, because he never changes his clothes or showers or something.
Another good reason to leave perfection.
Yes.
But you know what? He's dead. So
it takes it upon himself to climb up there and get him down.
Finds out he's dead. Bring him back to town, and like, oh, this guy died. And they're like, how'd he die? Dehydration. Somehow he got up there so long he ran out of water and died. So they're like, all right, we're out.
Time to go.
Again, as Joe mentioned, if you can sit up on a pole for about 3 or 4 days without anyone ever noticing you, you should not live there.
That is true.
Yeah, there's nothing going on that you need to be part of there.
So we're out. And again, they're leaving, and like they drive past busted up tents.
Sheep farm.
Yeah.
And there's like blood and guts everywhere and stuff. And they're like, oh, let's check it out.
Well, let's be fair. There's strawberry jello and cotton balls everywhere.
Yeah. The effects department did have a lot of strawberry jello.
I will say a bit more than cotton balls. Like, they really seem to leave large chunks of these sheep behind.
Yeah, there were some rib cages. Honestly, the effects were good. Aside from the blood itself, like the gore itself was kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
Overall, I thought.
And I mean, it was just weird in general for a predator that seems to just pull you under the ground and swallow you in one gulp. Like, it left a lot of sheep lying around.
An awful mess and a whole lot of clues to find out where it
just
is.
Just feeling peckish that day.
I mean, it really looked like a sheep stepped on a landmine.
Not just that, but like, what happened to that old man that they find his head? They pulled him under and just
left his head.
Him there?
You mean his rubber head?
Yeah,
mask?
They probably just did one bite, left his head there.
Did it sold for effect.
They wanted to leave a calling card?
Yeah, I would.
They're becoming a Batman villain now?
Yeah,
think of it this way. The dude was a sheep farmer. He probably tasted disgusting.
Yeah.
Also true.
You probably get him halfway down. Maybe that's why they smelled so bad. For
it was like 100.
Yeah.
It was
really
nice. That's why there wasn't much meat on him.
So they go back to town after seeing this, instead of just leaving.
Well, at this point, I believe they pass a construction site where some guys are working on the road.
They tell them a serial killer's on the loose.
Yes. And they're claiming a serial killer is killing a lot of the people around. They should run. They, of course, ignore this and continue doing work until he strikes the strawberry vein in the middle of the road.
I done struck Smuckers. We gonna be rich.
And his jackhammer ticks off and runs away.
Yes.
At first I was like, why did you put the shooting in? But it's for setup, because when this thing starts eating you guys, it knocks over like an avalanche and blocks the only road.
the only road in or out of town.
Because you can't go out the other side of the town. That's one way in, one way out.
Also, walls that don't seem to be that tall, so I get you can't really get a car through, but you probably will. walk if you had to.
Well, yeah, I mean, you climb over it, but I mean, then you're on foot for 50 miles to the next town.
Right.
I do have to give credit where credit's due. This movie does do a really good job of setting up things in such a way that all your questions are answered. Like, how come they can't just leave? Covers that roadblock quite nicely.
Yeah, this is very true. Especially for horror movies, that stuff is usually quite black. So yeah, these guys get killed. They leave behind some kind of red jello in their hat, despite losing the skull.
They're dead.
Our heroes speed off, smash their car into a wall for some reason, which gives the graboids.
Will they
launch into that now?
Val and Earl go back to town after the sheep killing, where they kind of discuss what's going on, and they decide they need to send Val and Earl back out. This movie consists of a lot of just going, trying to get in and out of town.
Yeah, they try to leave like five times.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Not only they try to leave, they seem to be pretty much out of it like four or five times, but go back for some reason until they are finally stuck by this roadblock.
Because they keep finding corpses.
Well, yeah.
Dead people.
That seems like more reason to get out.
I find a dead person. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm trying to call. They don't have cell phones. I'm out. We'll figure it out.
I'll call them when I get out of town.
We were headed into the big city. I will continue heading there and send someone else.
So I'm going to go find a police officer because there's none in this town.
So that's when they hit the roadblock. And like you were saying, for
and our second movie in the row to bring up Fright Zone, this snake-like creature comes out and grabs the back of their car. You don't see it at this point, I guess, but it's strong enough to stop them from speeding away.
Indeed, I think one of them thinks that he's stuck on something.
Yeah, until he finally guns the car enough and is able to escape and drives back yet again to the shop. At the shop, they realize what had stopped them. They find this large snake-like creature. The old man buys it off them, thus beginning his creature shop where he will later sell Monquais.
$15.
They sell it to him for $15.
Bargain of $15. He talked him down from $20 to $15.
And then proceeds to charge $15 for a photo with this thing.
It was just $3.
I'm sorry, $3. Which is seen as this master plan, but again, 14 people live in this town.
You're not going to turn much for profit.
And two of them are dead already.
Yeah. And two of them sold you this thing.
Yeah.
I don't know where they think the big money's coming from, but that ain't it.
Yeah, so this guy's shop pretty much is the only building that you see the inside of, aside from the other character's house. They don't have inside interiors of any building. But they use it pretty well, because it introduces most of the characters in the movie come to the shop regularly, so they see everyone. There's a kid, an annoying-ass kid named Melvin, the Mexican dude, who I don't know what he does, but he has all the ideas in the movie.
He does. I wrote that down.
He does a lot of Mexican stereotypes.
Latino guy has all the ideas.
Yeah, I imagine he's the one that keeps the community running.
Probably.
You got like some hippie-looking lady who I guess has a kiln, makes pottery or something. Yeah. And her
produces
daughter.
Children.
Yeah.
Somehow.
The girl from Jurassic Park, the little girl, is on a photo stick.
Yeah, Lex is there. Like the boss. She's taking pictures with the monster, kind of practicing for her role in the future. And is it the only doctor in the town that's talking about how all these people are dying? And he's off with his
He's building a new house.
He's building a new house, like, just outside the kind of the town limits.
Oh, but that's what the doctor wasn't. He's the one who said, he died of dehydration. That's right.
He's just outside of town trying to build his house, discussing plans with his wife when they get attacked.
And I wrote down in my notes, stupid old white people. Brian, next week.
Well, you see, what happens is when your generator gets swallowed by a giant hole and then spit out 15 feet in the air, instead of going towards it, get the fuck out of there. That's what you should do. But no, this guy's like, wait a minute, I should go check it out.
Yeah, let me investigate in the dark with nothing but a flashlight.
I'm going to investigate whatever shot my generator 15 feet in the air. Let's see what that is. Yeah, it ends in him being, eaten alive in front of his wife. He could have saved them both. They just got the fuck out of there. They'd both be alive right now. But nope, I ain't going to check it out.
Now no doctor. They already have no sheriff. Now they have no doctor.
At least she didn't trip and fall when she was trying to run away.
She would have though if she had longer.
She would have been higher.
Yeah, if it was more than 5 feet to the car, probably.
But this scene does establish that they can eat whole cars, because they pretty much rip the ground up under it and swallow it whole.
Yeah, she takes in the station wagon, which they proceed to pull underground.
They didn't really eat the car, right?
Well,
they don't eat the car, but they pull the whole thing under.
Yeah. They ate her.
They'll go to great lengths to eat a person.
She got eaten!
Well, next, we're back in the store, where they nominate Val and Earl to ride their horses out of town.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
douche Melvin puts the snake on his shoulder.
Yeah, so this brilliant kid puts the snake around his shoulder and comes running out of the store screaming while they're loading their guns and preparing to go into to deal with this menace. Yeah.
Right in front of Bert Gummer, played by Michael Gross, who's like, crazy gun-toting redneck that, I wouldn't make any sudden moves in front of this
man,
let alone run outside draping a tentacle monster.
Melvin should have had the front of his face blown out the back of his face.
Earlier in the movie, they said something about someone should kick his ass. And really, I don't know why we got through the entire movie without someone kicking his ass.
Yeah, bare minimum, I would have given him a butt stroke to the gut with my rifle. Something.
This was still 1990. That was perfectly acceptable. You could just beat some kid.
who's even Melvin's parents? It's never established.
I
don't think anyone would care if he whooped that kid's ass.
It's questionable where he lives, where he came from. Yeah. But yeah, I think everyone's in agreement. He should have gotten his ass kicked. There's plenty of jokes about feeding him to these monsters later, but sadly no one does.
They're riding out on the horses that they get from, they got it
from Walter.
Walter, okay.
Walter, this is where they find out the doc has been killed.
Yeah, they ride out past their place, trying to make sure they're okay, just let them know come to town. And they stumble across the sound of the car radio underground.
Playing the eternal classic, Dropkick Me Jesus. Dropkick Me Jesus through the goalposts of life. It was like, Dropkick Me Jesus not too far to the left or the right. It went a little further from there, but I couldn't make out the rest.
Wow. But yeah, so after this, they decide to ride as fast as they can the hell out of here. They realize pretty quickly that horses don't like these big, giant animals because horses freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
Well, also because these big, giant animals love horses and proceed to pull them in and eat them.
Yeah, the horses fall down and they're trying to get back up, but, there's a wire holding them down, which you're not supposed to see. But, that's where we get our first kind of glimpse of the monster, right?
The
snakes are popping out and grabbing these horses.
This is when we see the little snakes are, in fact, tongues, a much larger worm-like creature, which apparently in design, they originally wanted to make this have a hard outer shell that the smaller snake part would come out of and eat people, and quickly realized it was a penis and decided that was not the way to go.
Really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
The original design was pretty much just a outer foreskin that a worm would come out of and pull people in.
Red rocket.
So instead, they went with the mandibles and the snakes as tongues.
Yeah, apparently the production crew could not keep a straight face while filming it and looked that much like a dick. Wow, we have to change this.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty
awesome. Well, he still kept kind of the, it still has kind of a helmet. It's got very,
a bit, yeah. But it's got more of a beak now than just a helmet.
A bit like a coelacanth.
Looks more like a log turd.
Yeah, it's like you take the sandworm from Dune, you take all the majesty away from it.
Yeah.
Give it a slightly different mouth. Make it some tentacles.
Somewhat intentional. They were inspired by the worms from Dune.
But yeah, so this thing eats the horses. They're running from it. It's chasing them. And they're like, let's get the hell out of here. So they're running and they're running. And they come across this drainage ditch.
They don't quite make it.
Yeah, now mind you, this thing is maybe 12 feet deep, so it's not like a ditch, 12 feet deep, and 15, 10 feet wide or whatever, so it's a pretty hard jump, so they fall in. But
the worm chasing after them smashes its head into the concrete walls of this thing and kills itself.
It knocks itself dead.
They break it free, and you get your full glimpse now of this giant worm creature
oozing ragu everywhere.
It is weird, because the first shot where they get it with the jackhammer, that first shot with the road workers, is bleeding red blood.
Right.
And then from the rest of the movie on, it's orange.
Orange cheese sauce,
Scientist student
Rhonda.
Rhonda shows up and amazed by this discovery. And while the other two rapidly dig this giant worm off and start plans on how to haul it home and make money off it, she alerts them to the fact that, according to her readings, there may be three others.
Which suddenly show up, right?
Yeah, they're on there pretty quick.
At least one of them. Or no, I believe they head back to her equipment, try and gather some information before heading back, and that's when another one shows up that chases them to the rocks.
Yeah, Stumpy. The one whose arm they ripped off earlier.
They thankfully discover by accident that they can't go through rocks or climb, and somehow determine that they must be reading their vibrations through the ground, so they're safe as long as they stay on the rocks. They spend the night where Kevin Bacon kind of snuggles up with her. I guess it's supposed to be the beginning of their budding romance.
I guess. Who cares?
Literally, Malcolm. The
only revelation that we discover is that they all know how to pole vault.
Well, yes. Upon waking up, our two main characters are arguing over how to get out of this, and the girl just says, I do know how to pole vault, grabs a beam that's conveniently nearby, and spins her way to the next
rock. I don't know her. There's like four poles.
And why would you ask that? Why would they know how to pole vault?
More importantly, why would you ask that after you start pole vaulting to the next rock?
Also, I mean, there was enough debris there that, like, if MacGyver was there, he would have built a damn helicopter. Like, they have a lot of options in that pile.
You could have just built a bridge across to the next.
Pole vaulting would not have been my first choice.
A small house may have collapsed there with how much wood and everything.
How far is Kim Bacon from MacGyver? I mean, like, two steps, right? They're like,
what? He has the hair, but not the
hair. The hair does not make the man.
No, I'm talking about the connection
degrees to Kevin Bacon.
Come on, I was playing that.
I've played it, but I didn't know that people still did that past.
As a matter of fact, I think 91. I think the guy who plays Earl was in a movie with MacGyver, I think.
That's possible.
Oh, Stargate. I think he was on Stargate.
Anyway.
You can't see the face I'm getting robbed right now.
Thankfully.
The face I get a lot.
Thankfully for this girl, they somehow managed to pole vault well enough to chase after her.
And also, those rocks were so close together, they could have just walked or jumped. They really could, like, the monster could not maneuver around the rock faster than they could probably just pop.
Running would have been a bit risky, but yeah, they probably could have put the pole down and just walked across it or something.
Because you get a wide panning shot, and these rocks are literally, like, 5 feet apart.
They make their way over to her car, plan on, you know, making one last jump all together. To get in the car, throws the keys in her mouth, which does not seem like a brilliant plan.
She drives away with her face.
So she climbs into the front cab of this truck, face first, because that was the best plan she had.
Legs hanging out the back.
And turns it on, starts driving with her hands and feet, but still stays on the road spectacularly well.
Yeah, considering her face is, like, at the bottom of the steering wheel, she's moving real well.
It does almost perfectly follows that road. They somehow maneuver that back into a better position and drive back to the town where everyone else is waiting.
My notes just say, Melvin is a bitch. I don't really know.
I have BSing in Walter's store, someone kicked Melvin's ass.
I think he was. Is this the point where he's trying to raid the cash register?
He did that earlier, right?
When they were taking photos.
He screams and throws a basketball at Earl.
This is where he
Thankfully, at this point, the two gun-toting rednecks have left.
Yeah, they went to go.
They're driving around.
Their words, driver. Or something.
Yeah, they were on the lookout.
This whole thing lets them, Rhonda, the idea that they can tell where you are by vibrations and sound. Actually, she's letting everyone know what's going on. Of course, the monsters start showing up because they realize it's coming toward the town.
Of course.
Set up for it.
Well,
Kevin Bacon discovers that all their attack sites have been leading towards perfection.
This valley is one big smorgasbord.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Jack Doritos, by the way.
Which may or may not have commented on the most.
Anything to say about Dorito bag?
So this guy's attacking store, totally wrecking the only set these movies
have. Oh yeah, the fucking Pepsi machine rats him out.
Right, yeah, because earlier it showed that the Pepsi machine was faulty.
Actually, let's backtrack a little bit.
Yes.
Because we missed the point where Mindy, the girl from Jurassic Park, is pogo sticking outside.
Mm-hmm.
You're worried about the graboids are going to come get her, so Kevin Bacon just flying fucking tackles her to the ground.
That's true. Yeah, he does good.
Tackle a 7-year-old girl.
Tackles her to the ground. He gives her a people's elbow.
Yeah.
Knocks all of her teeth out. She's half dead.
And of course, now the graboids attack. And poor Rhonda gets caught up in a barbed wire fence.
Now, the cold grab boys, they don't really say that until, like, the last scene in the movie.
No, they come up for it in the store when they're BSing the first time.
Around this point, yeah. I believe he's discussing that this is a new creature that has been unfound by anyone before, and that they should be the ones to name
it. Yeah, because Walter and Melvin are shooting names around. Luckily, they are not referred to as Suckoids, but that is one of the names they produce.
Suckoids was one of the options.
That's Melvin's name.
Kevin Bacon tackles a small girl, saves Rhonda from the barbed wire fence by ripping off her pants.
Yes, it turns into a pants-eating monster, probably from the Beastmaster set.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, Beastmaster, they're recovering from the effects of an outbreak of pants-eating monster.
I assume to try and sex up the movie, but a very poor job of it, because it leads to very little.
It was the least sexy.
It was more of a, I'm quick thinking, take your pants off.
Like, yeah, that's all we can add a little bit of whatever.
We'll also add some sexual tension as he helps put iodine and shit on her legs and bandage them off.
I guess.
Before she is given pants again.
Who cares about that?
Yeah, a little bit of trivia I read, I guess. She intentionally did not rehearse any of her reactions in that scene due to pressure of taking her pants off in front of Kevin Bacon. So she's just like, let's just see what happens.
Well, it works, because she did seem kind of panicked and scared.
So they're all crawling over the shelves and things in the stores. The monsters are knocking them all down, and they all crawl up onto the roof.
The monsters have pretty much completely destroyed the floors at this point after the Pepsi machine, which Kevin Bacon also tackled.
Yeah, he jumped the flying tackle that problem.
Yeah. But Walter gets chomped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they eat Walter.
He totally gets chomped up.
And starts bleeding from the nose before it even attacks him. I believe you said because tentacle porn turned him on.
Like, I will say in this movie, as far as acting goes, I really believe these people really feel what they're feeling. Like, because they're not the main lines in the movie, but the dialogue seems like some stuff Disney would say.
Yeah, it's pretty natural. Yeah. Nothing too crazy.
Yeah, I mean, overall, though.
Was it not Miguel's idea to get on the roof?
No, it was,
I think it was Bowles.
Yeah, that was Bowles.
He saw the hatch in the roof.
Yeah. I think it was mostly out of necessity. They were just kind of, like, out of places to go.
Yeah. They did a pretty good job of making things happen, like, seem pretty natural, you know.
Oh, yeah.
How they were set up.
You know, the movie flew.
Rhonda gets dumped out a window. She doesn't make it to the roof, so she ends up on a water tower just
right
across.
Right next to the store. Pretty much just stuck there while they start calling out for help. They finally get a hold of Bert.
And Heather.
And Heather, the Gummers.
Reba McEntire.
Yeah, the best characters in this movie.
Best characters in a lot of movies.
Yes, truly. More movies need Bert Gummer. So they're trying to contact him, warn him of the coming threat, because I believe they get home at this point and start making ammo?
Yeah, they're putting bullets in a hopper for some reason.
Which, of course, makes a lot of noise, a lot of vibrations, sends the monsters running right towards them. They prepare themselves as any good apocalypse.
They're under the ground! Yes!
Person is,
you know, they tell them like five times that they're under the ground and they keep looking out windows like that's going to do something.
Yeah, and
they're
report like, back, we can't see anything. Like, yeah, we know they're under the ground.
Finally, Val's just like, Jesus Christ, Bert, get on your roof. They're under the ground.
Yeah, and like, we don't see anything. All the cameramen for Doomsday Preppers don't see anything. Nothing's coming.
Yeah.
It's too late to get on the roof now. The monsters are here. They smash through one of their walls, at which point Bert and Heather just open fire with everything they have.
It is too late,
Graboid. This scene is like, it's like 5 minutes long. And shoot,
I mean, it's straight up gunpoint.
When I say everything they have, I mean everything they have, including a flare gun.
And they have a lot.
I thought I was watching the original RoboCop.
Yeah. He metamorphed. Dignified.
Yeah,
that's true.
I know it had to do it for the scene room, but why did the thing sleep? Like, so sat there for five minutes.
At first, it's like, whatever, I'm going to get you. Then it was just like, ow, this really hurts. Then it's like, oh, stop.
Yeah, unless it's like a shark and it can't back up.
I was just going to say, at this point, I started to question whether or not it could back up.
Because it probably wanted to.
It really did just seem sad at moments. It doesn't have a face, really, but it looks sad.
You fire a flare gun in its mouth.
I think, like, at this point, all three snakehead things were just ripped off, destroyed.
I mean, Reba McEntire blew one off with a shotgun.
But that's not enough, so Bert breaks into the elephant gun and pops a few rounds into this thing.
Yeah, his wrists are powder by the time he's done with this. He's not holding the gun. I know it's a movie, but he's not holding that gun properly.
Yeah. But the part that really got me is they took enough time to have Reba cover her ears, but Bert did not. But it didn't seem to bother him in the least.
No, I mean, he was too high on testosterone.
But he would be dead.
They probably had wild sex.
I wouldn't even care about the vibrations it would make. Like, we would have the bone right there.
I imagine
crashed into our basement and shot it to death.
The force of those vibrations probably scare the other one away.
I mean, like, the years of preparation and anticipation for building up that rec room and just, like, letting it loose on that guy.
So they did take one down. They report that back to the others. They all start cheering. But unfortunately, again, too little too late, Stumpy is still back at the store figuring out how buildings work.
Yeah, it seems to get smarter as it goes on. Yeah. Learn about foundations and how to rip buildings apart and stuff.
Seems to know that one pillar he could hit to just turn the whole rooftop into a water slide and send everybody flying. Bert finally does get to the roof, and they come up with a plan. They realize that, you know, with this thing knocking houses down, they're not going to get away. It does kill another one of their friends who stupidly just had a trailer that they knocked down, and he tries to take refuge in a rubber tire.
Yeah,
Nestor.
Yes.
Well, he probably can't give candy out at Halloween, so it's, you know, he's fine. Acceptable loss.
Melvin takes it all.
I think he's trying to buy that. He's had a few Amber Alerts on him. He has to tell his friends. Report to everyone in the neighborhood.
Nestor gets sucked through a tire.
So he gets sucked through a tire. They realize these things are going to take these buildings down. They need to get away. They need to figure something out.
They kill Bert's car.
Yeah.
They even kill Bert's car.
After Bert,
one of their plans,
empties like 25 guns into the dirt.
Yeah.
After clearly pointing out that the dirt is a perfect bullet stopper.
Yeah.
He still proceeds to shoot
at it. Like, I don't know what's going on. I keep shooting at the ground. But
And these worms, despite not having ears or anything and being miles apart, seem to have heard their plans. So he just attacks the star out of nowhere.
That's one thing I didn't get. Like, the car had been stationary for a long time.
It was minding its business.
It was just there. So how do you even know that? A, it was a car, it would be like...
My theory is that they went under the car, and it started rocking, and the alarm started going off.
Yeah. So
maybe that, I mean, they're supposed to be deaf, you know.
Well, sound is...
Yeah, it is, like, kidding around, so
although
I'm assuming that's what
does, like, it did... I got the impression this thing circled their house a few times, so why was that the first time?
Also, they're, like, learning like crazy, so maybe they recognize, like, oh, this feels like tires, and...
This usually has a person in it.
We've eaten one of these before.
That is true. They've eaten the car before.
So anyway, they take their car out. They're searching for a new way to escape. Val says that they need a helicopter or a tank, which leads them to think back to the cat. They decide they're going to use that and the trolley to pull behind him.
Yeah, they had to beat the trolley because Miguel was like, we can't all fit on the bulldozer. That's how it sounded.
Yeah, don't think us racists here, the movie is.
You can, that's fine.
Well, we did, okay, we did make true. Quite a few Mexican jokes.
Yeah, still, the movie is making him into a very bad stereotype.
Yeah.
So they decide they need to get to this bulldozer, but it is quite a ways away, so they're trying to now lure these things away from them long enough so they can make a run for it.
So again, Miguel's like, hey, so, yeah. We got a lawnmower. We can
Miguel with the ideas?
Yeah.
A plus number one. So, Miguel again thinking of lawnmowers and so on.
So in case none of you understood what that cackling scream was, Miguel came up with the idea to use his lawnmower.
Walter's lawnmower. Yeah.
And he sets the key and ties it off so it just goes off on its own.
Nobody has any grass, so why a lawnmower?
Yeah, why has this thing even existed here? I don't know.
Whatever.
Again, I question why they lower Miguel down to take care of this problem, even though he's clearly the heaviest person on that roof and would be the hardest to get back up on it. But
maybe
also
he's more familiar with lawnmower than anyone else.
He's also the most expendable.
I imagine that's the most. Although he does survive this.
Well, it was his idea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Kevin Bacon's job to, well, Earl's job to run for it at this point.
Yes.
Yes.
Him and Kevin Bacon, Valentine battle. Once again, rock, paper, scissors to see who will go. Earl wins and decides he's going to go himself, but Val trying to give him a hearty handshake or whatever to,
elbows him in the chest.
Yeah.
Gives him, him a copy of Sucker Punch, which no one can stand. And runs off.
So yeah, Earl's incapacitated. Val just jumps off this roof onto the awning or whatever of this building, which completely collapses, and then just makes a run for it.
He's pretty fast. He's pretty
yeah. He gets it a good go.
He's going, and the monster's like, I want the lawnmower.
It was actually pretty entertaining, I have to say.
But at some point, they're like, what's this other noise? I'm going to stop chasing the loud noise.
The lawnmower falls over.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It does fall over. He's like, I'm going to go chase the other thing now. So, like, chasing Val, Kevin Bacon, chasing him. And he's like, I'm going to stop so they don't know where I am, even though they just know where he stopped. Because that's how they call everything else.
Yeah, it suddenly gets T-Rex vision out of nowhere.
It literally caught everything else when they stopped, but whatever.
Now, the two of them have this surrounded. They conveniently both stop just like a foot away from him and start sending the little snakes out, which he just kind of hopscotches over, somehow not alerting them to where he is.
He lifts one foot up and down repeatedly.
He's got crane kick skills.
So they determine they need to distract him away from him again.
So nice set up, the girl's on the water tower.
Yeah.
She kicks out the pipe from the water tower and makes it rain.
Not just that, but kind of setting up when they get showered with the poo before, that a lot of their piping is poorly fixed with just rags and tape, I assume. I don't know what was going on there.
I think that was held together by a rag.
Yeah, it was easy for her to kick out, you know? But she was quick thinking. I can make it rain.
Yeah, she kicks it out. The water falls on the ground, making a lot of noise and attracting these worms.
Graboid shower.
Yeah. Graboid shower.
He takes his frustrations out on the ladder.
Probably about to take her down as well, but Kevin Bacon makes his way over to the cat. Backs it up to the trolley there, puts it together, and somehow makes it back in time to save her.
And everybody suddenly develops these serious, like, jumping skills. This trailer, I mean, it's got a little dirt in it and stuff, but it's still, like, some of these are good, like, 10, 12-foot jumps, so they just fucking take a running leap and land fine. Like, not even having a roll, just straight up, like, just stick the landing.
Yeah, but I mean, it looks convincing enough. I thought, like, the actors were genuinely doing that. Like, it looked like all practical. It didn't look like stunt actors, even.
But by the list of stunt actors during the credits.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm just saying they did a good job.
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
With 30 stunt actors on 10. Yeah, there were more stunt
members. Yeah, I did actually recently find out 8 feet is the limit. More than 8 feet, you will severely hurt yourself, according to doctors.
I hurt myself jumping off like 4 feet.
Well, you certainly can, but...
Well, if you roll and stuff, you can do it.
True, but I mean, a comedian on another podcast actually broke both his ankles hiking because he jumped, it was roughly a 10-foot thing, and the doctors told him 8 feet.
Come on, Bert.
Okay, anyway.
We got off subject.
So they pick up the Punisher and wife. And then they're driving out into the desert.
Oh, we gotta point out that while Bert was on the roof, he was making pipe bombs.
Oh yeah.
He was not wasting time.
Yeah, he wasn't playing around.
Yeah, I do believe it was shown that they were just sawing off their own, like,
he was making pipe bombs out of his roof.
Yeah. The piping ventilation from their own house, they were slicing that off, and yeah, making pipe bombs with household chemicals in the right measurements, as he said later.
Although I am surprised they didn't just have grenades. Like,
they probably just had grenades.
I'm probably.
They had elephant guns and M16s.
Although, once again, as the movie set up earlier, when he was trying to buy his hollow point bullets, they don't always get the right item sent out to this middle of nowhere town.
With one road.
And 14 people total.
Pretty diverse, though. I mean, it was by black, but, like, it was Asian dude, a Latino dude.
That's about it.
There were old people.
There
were some Latino people working on
the road. Are they Latinos?
I think so.
There was at least one. I think.
Had 70s mustaches.
Yeah, they were just mustachioed. I don't know.
That's racist. You like.
And what about the.
You don't get a good look at
it. I mean, there are only 14, so if you go 2 out of 14, it's
still inclusive.
It's okay, yeah.
Yeah, the ratio is
the numbers. Good. The numbers work. So they're traveling along to see the monsters out in the distance.
Yeah, they call out that they see dust trails. The monsters are clearly doing something. To which Val just says, "I don't care as long as it's up there." Despite the fact it's in the direct path that they're headed.
Yep.
Yeah, they're clearly up to something.
Yeah.
Admiral Akbar is there, like waving.
Yeah, foolishly, again, kind of setting something up, but not as well, because I think literally the next shot is them cut a few feet ahead and falling into a sand pit that they've created for them, stopping the cat cold in its tracks and leaving them in the middle of nowhere.
So Melvin sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I just wrote that down.
At this point, they realize they need to make a run for the rocks. Rhonda determines that if they throw one of these bombs, perhaps they can scare them away from where they want to go.
Well, that's because one was attacking the trailer, and they threw one at it. And when it went off, the monster just took off like lightning. They were gone. So they were like, "Oh, we can scare them with these things. Let's make it work so we can get this rock."
So he tosses a bomb like 2 feet from where they are.
That's really the sissiest of the
roads. Really, it's a terrible start.
That's why he has guns.
But it does enough to frighten them off so they can make a run for the rocks. Melvin is whining and crying yet again, and only runs because Bert finally gives him a gun, although it's not loaded, which I love.
And to be fair, he couldn't really throw the bomb that far because his arm was probably broken in 6 places.
Not only shot in the basement, but continued to shoot at the ground repeatedly. So they make it to the rocks and then just kind of get stuck up there.
Start bickering amongst themselves.
Yeah. Bert rightly starts bitching about how he could have been safe in his house, which does beg the question, why did he leave? They had no good reason to listen to Val or Earl.
Well, I mean, like, their foundation of the house was already jacked up because one took out a whole wall. So, I mean, like,
true.
But they could have had a better arsenal there, I guess.
Yeah. You know. They probably would have had a better shot there than they did. It's been the situation they end up in.
And as we find out, he had a cannon there, apparently. That would have changed things altogether.
That would definitely penetrate some ground. But despite their bickering, they come up with a plan of using some of these bombs to go fishing, dragging them along the ground and making enough noise to attract some graboid attention. Shows off his lasso skills.
Mm-hmm.
They get the first graboid without too much trouble and blow it to smithereens, showering the cast in
SpaghettiOs blasted everywhere.
And butternut squash. Mm-hmm. But the second one, Stumpy, our friend from before, is not as easily fooled.
He's the main.
He's the main attraction here.
He's a nemesis.
He's also a mortar, apparently, because he fires the bomb.
Yeah.
Quite a precise arc.
Yeah, right back onto the pilot. He fired the pogo stick the same way.
Yeah.
And the
generator. He landed that shit right in the bomb
pile. It did bounce off the rocks and land right in the bomb pile. Yeah. Very conveniently.
Boom goes it out.
Yes.
But Val had one in his hand.
Yes.
Very important.
Yeah, the most important part is Val has one left, and Val, Earl, and Rhonda are both scattered from the rocks in this explosion, and now are out and vulnerable.
It's so scary.
So they wind up in the same place that the movie started, over this big, huge cliff.
Kevin Bacon was peeing off of.
Yeah, overlooking into a much nicer valley than where they all live.
Yes. It's like green and lush and water.
It caused me to yell, "Why don't you just live?"
I came up with the theory that perhaps this was a Land Before Time situation, and they didn't realize there was such a nice valley outside of where they lived.
Well, they should have followed the tree stars.
Perhaps this movie would end with them finding this new lush area to go live and have a happier life.
Kevin Bacon gets the idea from the stampede earlier, which is a callback to the beginning, which we didn't talk about, but it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, he woke Earl earlier by claiming there was a stampede.
I like Earl's tactics in that, too. Immediately jump out of the truck while still being in a sleeping bag.
Yeah,
makes perfect sense to do when Val's just
stampede. It'll get a lot easier.
Absolutely.
because he, as he explained, he's an expert on stampedes. He's been in one before. He gets the idea from this to try and get this thing to charge this giant cliff. So he just takes off, apparently with no real other thought, like, as to what's going to happen to Earl or how to light this thing since they didn't have the lighter.
He just wants to dance.
Well, he thought he did until he already started running. Rhonda has the lighter or something.
Now, this is why planning is important, but they did set up he's not the best at planning. Now the three of them are on the run, headed straight towards this cliff. The worm chasing after them. He waits the last possible second, which, again, I don't quite understand his tactics of he rips off a portion of the fuse and then tells them to wait till the last second to light it.
Yeah.
Why not just leave more fuse on there?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Nitpick, I know, but it was just kind of a silly, pointless piece of footage, I guess. But on this cliff, he lights the fuse, tosses it behind the worm. They start berating him for missing, but of course it goes off.
Part of his plan.
Yeah, sends that worm firing like a rocket. He waits till the last possible second, dives out of the way, and the worm fires out of the side of this mountain.
Can you fly?
He screams, "Can you fly, sucker?" Which clearly was not sucker in some original cut, and the thing drops down and explodes on the rocks.
The most majestic shot of the film.
Yeah, it doesn't really fire out of this. It
drops like a turd.
Well, yeah, really, it does look like they just filled a Maragot with SpaghettiOs on the sidewalk.
Yeah, that's pretty much the effect it has.
Pretty much the end of the movie.
I think it's just like one jump cut back to town.
Yeah, with the kiss.
A bit of the, an ending to the love story between Val and Rhonda. But
I feel like I don't think you see any other characters. Just Earl, Val, and Rhonda.
Yeah, Earl and Val are all cleaned up because they're about to go sell their story to People Magazine.
People Magazine.
National Geographic. National Geographic.
The New Haven Register.
It'll be a blurb in News of the Weird.
M seeking G.
Grab wire.
But TMZ. She's like looking at him, talking to him, like, "So, anything you guys want to do? Anything? I'm right here. Anything's going on?" Like,
she even tries Earl.
Yeah, there is a lovely shot where she's trying it with Val, and that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And kind of leans over to Earl, which I don't know if he's supposed to be like for help or like. He's not taking this opportunity.
Run it up.
You want a shot? Yeah.
Consolation for him?
Yeah, I'll settle.
But so she walks away, and then Earl's like, "Dude, what are you doing?" So Val's like, "I know, I'm gonna go." He's like, "I know, I'm gonna go."
I've read the script. All right.
Finally balls up and goes over and just ends up kissing her.
Yeah, literally like, roll crash, movie over, done.
Yep. Done. Yeah.
And then done.
Like, I thought it was interesting too for a horror movie. It had a surprisingly high amount of survivors.
It did.
Like, most of that town made it out.
Yeah. Again, considering you only started out with 14 people, it is surprising how many survived it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really didn't have any of the normal, like, horror movie tropes that you would kind of get. Like, it didn't really have the, the slutty girl.
Yeah.
It wasn't your stereotypical a teen people. Movie.
Yeah.
That kind of stereotypical people.
I mean, for the most part, everybody made, like, sound decisions.
Yeah.
Like, everything he did basically made sense.
Yeah.
Other than friggin' Nestor trying to hide on a tire, but I mean, he was panicking.
Yeah, he was.
He just got dropped off the trailer.
He was a panicky loser.
Then, it was, again, the movie established that some of these people weren't the brightest, as I believe they discussed with the, what was it, we don't know anything about them. Yeah, but where do they come from? Or,
yeah.
I forget what that line was.
Well, it's kind of like the Island of Misfit Toys for people.
Yeah.
That's why they're all there by themselves.
It was probably like a nuclear testing site.
Yeah,
I believe she said there's no precedent for this. Yeah. I believe she said there's no precedent for these creatures. And they're like, so where do they come from?
Yes, that was it.
Music-wise, I thought it was adequate. It doesn't really have an exciting score, but I think it still it did what it needed to do.
Yeah.
There's no like memorable song or anything, but
certainly not.
I don't know about that. Oh, I forgot about Dropkick Me Jesus.
what about Reba's lovely work at the end?
That's the end, though.
That's true, yeah.
But yeah, throughout the movie, it's just simple scores. Some of them perhaps used more than needed. Quite dramatic when they find the man that died of dehydration on a pole, which, like, it's a man that's horribly old that died. It's not the most exciting.
It wasn't really like, there wouldn't be a soundtrack for this, because it's really just more effect sounds, like...
Yeah,
I need to sound dramatic right here. So,
yeah,
the classic jump scare noise when they lift the hat off the ground and see the guy's face.
Some stings in there.
Yeah, yeah, all around I think it worked well enough. Mm-hmm. All right, so now it's time to rate the movie. Go around to the table and everyone basically votes yay or nay. Yay gets a star, nay gets no stars, and at the end tally it up to see how many stars it has and see if we really recommend it or not. Let's start with Brian.
Oh, I'll give it a star. This movie was pretty entertaining. Like I said, the acting was not bad for what it was, and it set up, had enough setups and foreshadowing for you to follow the whole thing without any problem. And it was, you know, it's entertaining. I mean, it's some funny moments and some cool effects for that for 1990. But yeah, I'd recommend it. I think everyone should see it. Give it a star.
Rob.
Oh yeah, definitely. I absolutely give it a star. This movie is one of my guilty pleasure movies. It's one of those movies that you can watch, like, anytime. There's not really any slow dragging parts. It's like a brisk 90 minutes or so. It goes by really quickly, and it picks up, like, almost immediately. There's a little bit of futzing around in the beginning, but it picks up and it goes, and it just kind of, it continues on. And I think it's just entertaining. For a movie that came out before Jurassic Park, I'd say the effects are great. It's all practical effects. There's no CGI. And I think they did a great job. And it's one of those just fun, you know, like brainless, shut off and watch movies. So definitely a recommend from me.
Joe.
Pretty much, Rob said everything I was going to say. I mean, I can't really find any major faults with the movie. It does what it needs to do relatively quickly. It's the kind of movie I wouldn't go out of my way to watch, but if it was on, I certainly would watch it from wherever I turned in and, you know, watch the rest of the movie. And I'd recommend it to anybody. I think it's a movie that everybody needs to see, even though there really isn't any major, like, great scenes that, you know, make the movie famous for, but I still think everyone should watch it, and I give it a star.
I second those comments. A high recommend from me. It's a movie that's near and dear to my heart. I love the practical effects. I mean, Casablanca it is not, but if you know what you're getting into, it's great. It's very entertaining. And does, again, yeah, it does all it needs to do for a horror movie, especially. Yeah, the special effects are good. They're practical. And, you know, yeah, it's, if you come across it on TBS or anything, I always will, you know, sit down and watch the rest of it. It's enjoyable. So,
but only on TBS. This podcast brought to you by TBS.
Or the Sci-Fi Channel.
Please don't sue us, TBS.
Or Doritos.
Sorry, that's my go-to for, you know, when what will play these B movies at nonstop.
I mean, is it even a random hours?
No, well, it's really not. Yeah. That's true. The budget is certainly there.
Yeah.
Yeah, cast too. Kevin Bacon, Reba McEntire, that's not too bad.
I mean, it didn't do so well in the box office, but it really, like, home video sales and rentals, it took off.
Got,
like,
three sequels.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's and Michael Gross, people, awesome as Bert Gummer. I can't stress that enough. Yeah, and he's in all three movies and the TV series.
You know what, let me add an amendment to what I said. It does have a memorable scene, because that part when it breaks in the rec room and they just shoot the shit out of
yeah,
it. I do remember that from, like, seeing it almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's either one or two, actually.
Yeah, where they just burst in there and they shoot the hell out of it. And, like, I think that's the first time I ever saw that work in a movie. I was like, yeah!
So yeah, a recommendation from me as well. I believe that's 4 stars, 4 recommendations. A must-watch from the 4AM crew.
Yeah, really, this is a movie that everybody does need to know about.
Yeah, for real.
It's a jewel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to recommend anything else. Like, it's
a jewel in the crowd of crappy 90s monster movies.
Oh yeah.
If, however, The Tremors has a number after it, do not watch that.
Until we tell you it's okay.
Until we tell you, yeah.
I already will argue that point, but we'll save that for another podcast. In the meantime, anything else anyone wants to add?
Buy Doritos.
Right. I'm creeping under your house right now.
Yes, buy Doritos, watch TBS, like, comment, and subscribe. We, do we want to get into that?
You can find us on Blogger at 4 Guys in a Podcast, or 4 Guys in a Movie Podcast, or 4AM Podcast. You can subscribe to us there. We have a Gmail account. If you'd like to get a hold of us, it's the4ampodcast@gmail.com. And you can
can also, I guess, follow us on Twitter. I don't know who's going to be tweeting. But 4AM Podcast for the Twitter account. Figure out details as we go.
You can contact any one of us there. I guess it's a gamble of who will respond, but...
I give free autographs.
It probably won't be Joe.
It definitely won't be Joe.
It won't be Rob.
Well, that narrowed it down quickly.
But I give free autographs.
You're the person that's the worst at responding to emails is now in charge of Twitter and everything else.
Fantastic. Yay! What? Brian, you suck at responding to emails, apparently.
I meant me.
There were still two options left.
Sorry. I was assuming that if you weren't so distracted by your phone, you would have said something similar.
This faux pas brought to you by Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Thank you, and we can't wait to see you next time.
They're under the ground!
Right, guys, see if you can fly, sucker!
The manly sound of you cracking open a Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Yeah.
That is the sound of drink number one.
You don't know what
that. You should have
that moment.
I just wanted a can to crack, you asshole. I'm glad I can finally make you laugh with the shittiest thing that really came out of your mouth. You jackass. This is the sound of my balls coming up.
I just kind of want to tease.